You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Arlene McMichael. 2 years ago, Michigan passed a law requiring schools teach about genocide. How's that effort going? Corey Harbaugh, a member of the Governor's Council on Genocide and Holocaust Education, joins us today for an update. He'll be speaking in Kalamazoo on Saturday, May 26. Harbaugh is Director of Teaching and Learning at Fenville Public Schools in Allegan County. Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be with you.
You're going to be a keynote speaker at an event Saturday at Kalamazoo College's Arcus Center for Social Justice Leadership, and it's going to be commemorating the 24th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide of the Tutsis. The first place that I would like to start this conversation is the fact that you're a member of the Governor's Council on Genocide and Holocaust Education, and that was created in 2016. That was in response to some changes in terms of what educators had to teach in the curriculum. Can you tell us a little bit about what educators now have to teach?
That's correct. In the passing of Public Act 170, Michigan joined a short list of states in the country that mandates that in our education system, our students are going to learn about the Holocaust and genocide education. And in our mandate in Michigan, that means the Armenian genocide is required content. And so this Public Act establishes as required part of our curriculum that in order to go through our schools and to graduate, you have to spend some time learning about some of the most atrocious events in human history and what they mean historically, but also what they mean about being citizens as our kids graduate and leave Michigan schools and go out and become citizens in our state. That's an important part, and so we've made that a part of our required curriculum here.
Is it specifically dealing with the Holocaust in Germany, or does it also require other genocides such as dealing with Rwanda?
So in the mandate, we are going to teach about genocide, but specific to the mandate, there are two historical examples of genocide that are mandated topics for this curriculum edition. And those are the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust that took place during the events of World War II or leading up to and during World War II, and then also the Armenian genocide that took place consistent with events leading into and around World War I. So those two historic events are the specific genocides that are covered. But with that, then, we're going to look at and put into the recommended materials and training that we study genocide as a concept and a historic pattern of events that repeats. So there's work by a gentleman named Dr. Stanton who has identified patterns of genocide. And when you look at genocide as a topic in and of itself, and then you apply what's been learned about genocide, it applies to what happened in Rwanda in leading into 1994 and the events of 94, which was the genocide against the Tutsis. But also when you look at current events or you look at other historic examples of genocide and mass atrocity, those patterns repeat. So we wanted our curriculum by mandate to use those two historic events, the Armenian genocide and the Nazi Holocaust against the Jews during World War II. We're going to use those as historic examples. We're also going to connect to other historic examples of genocide and atrocity, and that's going to help us understand genocide in and of itself.
Before we go much further, so people can truly appreciate this, you have far too many credentials for me to list, but I do want to list a few of them. You serve as a U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum Teacher Fellow and a University of Southern California Shoah Foundation, I don't know if I'm saying that correct, Master Teacher. More importantly, you've had chapters in books on the topic of the Holocaust, and in particular, there's one called As the Witnesses Fall Silent, 21st Century Holocaust Education in Curriculum, Policy, and Practice. You had a chapter that was dealing with pedagogy, basically the method and practice of teaching. But what people need to know is that long before you went into administration in the Fenville schools, you were a teacher. This is where your journey started in terms of teaching about the Holocaust. You're not Jewish, right? You're not Jewish.
That's correct.
Yet you've become quite an expert in this, and you have kind of taught yourself. You were an English teacher.
That's right.
At Goebbels High School. Tell us about that journey, why you became so passionate about this.
Well, thank you for asking about that, and thank you for saying most importantly you are a teacher, because of all of the list of credentials that I am proud of, being a teacher is the first and most important. When I was a teacher back more than 10 years ago, I was assigned to teach a Holocaust unit in an English class, and in delivering that unit, I learned that I didn't have enough historic and content knowledge to be able to do the topic justice. And so that got me asking questions about my own professional development and some professional reading I wanted to do. And I realized that a lot of the questions I had about the historic context for teaching about the Holocaust, many of the questions I had not yet been answered, or at least hadn't been shared publicly. And so that began for me a process of asking questions, looking for those answers. And when those answers existed in community, whether it was professional development community or resources that were there, to pursue them. And where those questions didn't have answers, to try to answer them myself, which is how the research chapter came about that ended up in the book that you talked about. I wanted to know how effective teachers across the country were teaching about the Holocaust, the strategies they were using in the classroom, how they were assessing. And I surveyed teachers, more than 1,000 teachers, and I took the responses to questions and collected them in terms of research. So really, this entire journey of mine has been about being in a classroom, wanting to be an effective teacher of what I felt was compelling and critical history for students, wondering how other effective teachers were doing it, and then sharing the answers that were coming up to questions that I had and questions that other teachers had. That led me to a series of professional development opportunities. I started at the Olga Lenyel Institute in New York City, which had a 10-day seminar for teachers, and it was really around teaching the issues of teaching Holocaust history, but also the issues that are wrapped around Holocaust education.
The full name of that group is the Olga Lenyel Institute for Holocaust Studies and Human Rights in New York City.
That's right. And that program has a yearly seminar for teachers from across the country. And the good people at TOLE realized that they can't bring every teacher in America to New York City for that seminar. So then they funded a series of satellite seminars across the country. And having been an alum of that program, I helped establish a similar program based on that model here in Michigan for teachers. And we run that program every July, and it's held at the Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills, Michigan. And what we do is we invite teachers from across Michigan to come to Farmington Hills for a week-long program.
One is coming up in July, and you are co-leading that.
That's correct. And we're actively recruiting, and what we want to find are teachers out there with some of the questions that I had more than 10 years ago that they have from their own classrooms about how do I teach about the Holocaust. But now, increasingly, given the mandate, we're including more historic content to include the Armenian Genocide, to include other examples of mass atrocity like the genocide against the Tutsis, like the Holodomor that took place in Ukraine in the 1930s, and other examples that really are understudied and not understood well in this country.
You're listening to Corey Harbaugh on WMUK's West Southwest. Harbaugh is updating us on efforts in Michigan schools to teach about genocide, as required by law passed in 2016. He's a member of the Governor's Council on Genocide and Holocaust Education. You kind of hinted at it earlier, that there's lessons to be learned from studying these atrocities from years past. It's relevant today.
Absolutely. What I found when I was teaching, and this really began the journey, was that kids, 18-year-old kids, I was working with seniors, you know, they were going to graduate, and we were telling them things like, you know, you're going to go out and change the world. And what we realized is that the world in its history has examples of what can happen out there, and examples of that, like the Holocaust, contains some of the most atrocious and most important lessons we have to learn. But they also give us examples of what happens when humanity takes place, where a neighbor looks after a neighbor or somebody stands up to power. So most of Holocaust education is studying atrocity, but there are also examples of what it means to be an upstander and not a bystander. And we think that's really important education. 70 years after the Holocaust, a couple of years ago, you know, we found ourselves remembering 70 years back, but also looking around at examples of dehumanization that were taking place then and continue to take place. You know, a couple of days ago in the news, I read about a reference that had been made by a member of our current administration here in the United States calling a certain population of individuals animals. And that's the kind of language that was used in 1994 when the genocide against the Tutsis took place. Tutsis were referred to as cockroaches and other kinds of vermin in public media. And then you go back to the years leading up to the Holocaust. Often language that was dehumanizing was pointed at the Jewish population in Germany and across the Third Reich. Vermin, cockroaches, rats, disease, things like that. And so when you study the Holocaust, those lessons are still as relevant today, again, when you look at the patterns that repeat. So what I found was with those 18-year-olds, they were eager for, they were deeply connected to these historic lessons because they understand, and they understand the relevance and the connection to today.
So that's cause for concern when we begin to hear that type of language.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And what I love about teaching the Holocaust and other genocides to students is you teach them the history, you have them take a look at it, and they go, well, wait a minute. What about what's happening now in different places in the world? And unfortunately, often, too often, wait a minute, what's happening here in my neighborhood or in my town or in my country? Without having an agenda, without making it overtly political, because that's not our responsibility. It is our responsibility to get our kids to look at their world and to ask questions about it. And when you study history like the Armenian Genocide, like the Holocaust, those questions naturally come up to kids and they make those connections when they think about the topics.
When people begin to use this type of language against another group and it becomes kind of, I don't know, part of the public conversation, that's a gateway to what? What are you saying and what have you found?
So, and this isn't my work. This is the work of Dr. Stanton, who has published widely on stages of genocide. And one of those stages includes the process of dehumanization. In order for genocide or atrocity to take place, in a society like Germany in the 1930s and 40s, or anywhere in the world today, people have to be dehumanized. There has to be a target population that has been identified as less than or different than in dangerous ways. And that process of dehumanization, it has to take place in order for groups of people or a country to turn its laws or to turn neighbor against neighbor to target a population who has been dehumanized. So it's part of what happens. Some of the work that we've incorporated into our Governor's Council work comes around the idea that genocide happens in stages. And if we can get our students to understand those stages, and again, we've used the work of Gregory Stanton, who is an American professor and scholar, but a worldwide leader in helping understand genocide as it happens in stages.
Do you discuss those stages in part of what you promote as best practices for teaching about genocide?
We do, absolutely.
What are some of the other stages?
So it starts with classification, where people have to be distinguished into us and them. And a lot of times, like when you take the genocide against the Tutsis in 1994, the Tutsis were created as a class of people through the colonial process that plagued much of Africa and much of the world for more than a century. And when classifications are set up, and then one of those classifications of people is targeted, there's another stage is discrimination. And discrimination becomes legal or becomes common practice in that society. Dehumanization, then people are organized, according to Dr. Stanton, they're polarized. And then as events lead to genocide itself, there's preparation for genocide, there's persecution, and then those stages rise to physical violence. Interestingly, also, Stanton talks about the final stage being denial, and that's often the case where a society or a group of people will look back at the historic event and say it didn't happen or it didn't happen in that way. That's certainly a dynamic with the Armenian genocide. One of the really interesting things about the genocide against the Tutsis that we're commemorating here on May 26th is that in Rwanda there has been incredible work that has taken place to try to deal with the fact that in that genocide it was often neighbor as attacker and neighbor as victim. And how do you reconcile a country and communities and neighborhoods where that happened? And so in many ways, they've taken really great steps to work towards reconciliation instead of denial. Some inspiring work that comes out of Rwanda.
And since you mentioned the topic of denial, there are some people who may say the Holocaust in Germany didn't happen, or they dispute the figures.
Right.
What figures would you say? I've read several in terms of the number of deaths in Rwanda. And people need to appreciate this only happened over a couple of months, you know, between, I think it was, April and July of 1994. I've read numbers that said close to 800,000 to about a million people were killed. I've read some numbers in terms of how many people died during the German Holocaust. What number do you teach?
Well, so when we talk about the genocide against the Jews, we talk about usually the number 6 million. And then when you include others that were killed as part of the machinery of the Holocaust, which included other target groups, you get approaching 11 million. But we really resist talking about numbers. What we say is that there wasn't one Holocaust. There was one Holocaust for every person who was caught up in it as a victim, or as a perpetrator, or as a bystander. And we really resist making it about numbers when we work with teachers. Numbers don't lead to critical thinking enough. What's more important is that each one of those, whether you say 6 million or 11 million, and I have two more things to say about that, but each one of those is a human story that was cut short. And what's more important is the story and not the number. And so we really want to focus on the people who lived in Germany or in Austria or in Poland prior to the Holocaust, that were living lives that were just as complicated and just as full and rich and human as the lives we live today. We want to focus on those lives prior to, and then we talk about this historic event that we call the Holocaust, and then we talk about life after. And every single one of those is a story as deep and rich as any other human story. The other thing I'll say, one of the things that makes Holocaust studies so exciting and different than maybe a study of the Armenian Genocide is Germany has been incredibly open with resources. They've taken responsibility as a nation, and because of that, we've had great scholarship and opportunity to really study the historic event that's the Holocaust. The Armenian Genocide is different because that took place in what is now modern-day Turkey and Armenia. And Turkey, which, you know, at the time of the Ottoman Empire, was making a transition to what became the modern state of Turkey. Well, the current state of Turkey has a very strong position that genocide wasn't a genocide. Yes, there were casualties of Armenians, but those took place in the context of World War One, and World War One always, or wars always have civilian casualties. And so they have taken a very different position than the country of Germany. And as scholarship opens and opportunities open, Russia became more open about 10 years ago. And some of the scholarship that wasn't available prior to coming out of Russia that helps us understand, just a few years ago, the number of concentration camps, Holocaust scholars were surprised to learn, was over 40,000. That data wasn't available 10 and 15 and 20 years ago, but because of the opening of research sources, we know more now today, and we're going to know more tomorrow and next year. We hope that happens in Turkey. We hope that happens as we study what happened in Rwanda and the other genocidal events. But the Holocaust is special because of that scholarship opportunity that we can use to study it.
And with Germany taking responsibility and acknowledging the Holocaust, my sense is that often what victims want is they want validation of their experience, that in fact that it did occur. And sometimes that's why the numbers are relevant for those populations that it certainly directly affected.
That's a beautiful, fair point. And if I may, working on the Governor's Council, there are a number of representatives on the council who come because they have a scholarship in the Holocaust, or they have a personal connection to the Holocaust because they're descended of survivors. And the same is true. There are members who represent the Armenian community and have scholarship about the Armenian genocide or have deep personal connection. And for me, working on the Genocide Council has been a life gift, working with the Armenian community, as I come to understand the way that those stories have not been able to be public because of some of the political positioning around the Armenian Genocide with Turkey as a NATO ally and the United States and its position, those stories are just as compelling, just as important. And also, the folks who represent the Holodomor, descendants of those people who came out of Ukraine and survived the mass famine there, or working with Rwandan genocide survivors, Tutsis, every single one of those stories is compelling. It has been an amazing journey for me to be part of this council and try to put education around those historic events.
I would like to reference a point that you mentioned earlier that we can learn from these historical events. You were talking about what you try to have students understand is being what you called an upstander and not a bystander. Let's close on that. Talk more about that and how it applies to modern day.
What I hope every student gets a chance to do, every adult, every person gets a chance to do, is to listen to a survivor give his or her personal testimony. And because when that happens, when you hear another person, you are moved by a human story of survival and often deep loss and personal and family and community rupture. I have never seen students not be affected by that. And when you look across the table or you look across the room at a person, you can no longer as easily stay silent or uninvolved when something is being directed, an act of violence or an act of hate or bigotry at somebody else. The goal of our K-12 education system should be, as much as anything else, to prepare citizens. And good citizens are citizens that take responsibility for their neighbor, for their town, their community, their state, their nation, their world. And to do that, you can't sit passively by when things are taking place around you and be inactive or be a bystander. Again, it's that human story. It's hearing testimony. It's being called to action. We know that we're preparing kids who have had a chance to solve algebraic equations or do chem labs or things like that. Public Act 170 says we also want kids who have been prepared by studying this history to see opportunities for them to get involved in their own lives and the lives of their neighbors when things are happening that should make them alarmed.
Mr. Harbaugh, good luck with your upcoming studying, learning, and teaching critical lessons in Holocaust education on July 9th to the 14th at the Holocaust Museum in Farmington Hills.
Thank you for your interest and your support. We are really proud of our association with Western Michigan University. We're proud to be working with teachers across the state, and we hope that the vision of all of this work comes true someday, but we're going to work until it does.
What is that partnership with Western? I'm not sure we made that plain earlier in the conversation.
So our Summer Seminar for Teachers is a program of the Third Coast Writing Project at Western Michigan University, which is chaired by Jonathan Bush, professor of English at Western. And since our beginning in 2011, we've been a program of that, of the Third Coast Writing Project. So teachers who take our program can earn graduate credit through Western, but what we also do is we use the methodology of the Writing Project, which is there at Third Coast, as part of our teacher training methodology.
Mr. Harbaugh, good luck with your upcoming studying, learning, and teaching critical lessons in Holocaust education from July 9th through the 14th at the Holocaust Museum in Farmington Hills.
Thank you for your interest and your support. Our Summer Seminar for Teachers is a program of the Third Coast Writing Project at Western Michigan University, which is chaired by Jonathan Bush, professor of English at Western. And since our beginning in 2011, we've been a program of that, of the Third Coast Writing Project. So teachers who take our program can earn graduate credit through Western, but what we also do is we use the methodology of the Writing Project as part of our teacher training methodology.
Corey Harbaugh is the keynote speaker for an event commemorating the 24th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide of the Tutsis, being held at Kalamazoo College's Arcus Center for Social Justice Leadership on Saturday, May 26. For more information, go online to WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.